Well, from feral hogs and garlic mustard to Asian carp and the emerald ash borer, we are confronted with a wide range of invasive species in Wisconsin. And the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and the Wisconsin Council on Invasive Species have been working to develop administration rules to identify, to classify, and to control invasive species. And they're looking for comments on these proposals, and we'll talk about how you can get involved in that. I think the comments are due by January 25th. So we've got some time yet, and you'll have a chance to learn more about it as we visit with our three guests today. Ron Martin, who's an aquatic invasive species program and group leader for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Ron, nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
Jane Cummings Carlson is the Forest Health Program, with the Forest Health Program in the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Jane, hi. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Larry.
And Kelly Kearns, back once again, Invasive Plant Program Coordinator with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Kelly, good to have you back, too.
Thanks for having us.
Well, we got lots of different invasive species, don't we, Kelly?
Yeah.
What are some of the let's talk about this. I'm going to get you all involved maybe a little bit. What are some of the invasive species? What impacts are they having in the state? Kelly, I'll start with you, maybe.
Okay, well, we have a lot of different invasive species, and the rules that we've proposed, that we're trying to get comments on, cover all of the animals, so everything from terrestrial vertebrates like feral hogs to the invertebrates such as some of the earthworms and some of the insects that impact forests. It also covers all plants, so aquatic plants such as Eurasian water milfoil, terrestrial plants such as garlic mustard, buckthorn, some of those species. So we have a number of different species that are all listed out in the rule. And and I forgot to mention fish as well.
Well, Ron probably would have brought it up if you hadn't, wouldn't you, Ron?
Oh, absolutely.
And when we think about fish, we've got some issues out there, haven't we?
Yes, we do.
Talk about those a little bit.
Well, there's a number of fish that are already present in Wisconsin waters. Particularly the waters of Great Lake Michigan, and Lake Superior, like the round goby, the ruff, sea lamprey, of course. And we've got some that are in our inland waters, like common carp. But then there's others that are poised to move into our waters, like the Asian carp species. And those are the only thing that's keeping them from the Great Lakes right now is the electrical barrier on the Chicago Ship Canal, and they could also move up through the Mississippi River up into our waters that way.
Yeah, so we've got some real problems there. And I guess, Jane, when we think about forests, that's probably maybe one of the later things that we think about when we think about invasive species, but we got our problems there, too.
Indeed, Larry. We have quite a long history of dealing with a number of invasive organisms in our forests. For instance, the European gypsy moth has been in our state for a number of years, and that insect, by feeding on the leaves of the oak in particular, causes the trees to become stressed. There's also a fungus. Many people may not know this, but a fungus that causes a sore or canker on butternut trees and has literally nearly wiped out the butternut from North America and was first found in Wisconsin in the 1960s. But as Ron mentioned, with the fish species, we are also waiting for a number of species who are moving west from Michigan through the UP and also around through Illinois. And so that's one of the reasons why this rule is so important.
Yeah, and we want to talk some more about that rule. By the way, if you'd like to join in, I didn't give you the number. Let me do that right now. It's 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. If you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. And between Ron and Jane and Kelly, I pretty much can cover the whole area here of invasive species and the classifications, and certainly to talk about these new rules that are out there being proposed. So give us a call, and we'll be glad to get you on the air. So give us the history. Can you talk a little bit about the history of this whole rule business? Ron, you want to start with you?
Well, we started about 2 years ago on developing a rule package. There's an internal team that has been involved in developing the rule. Besides us three, there's about another four or five staff people that are involved. The state statutes, Section 23.22, mandate to the department that we develop rules, and that's the reason why we're doing it. But there's some other reasons as well. We have a very piecemeal approach right now in terms of how we regulate invasive species through the department. And this is more of a comprehensive look at what's needed as far as a rule package that would cover all the whole range of species that we're concerned with.
Yeah, I would think it would be hard to write a set of rules that would apply across a broad range. You got everything from snails to buckthorn. Kelly?
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a real challenge to try to do that. And we think that we've got a system that will work. And for some species, the regulations are actually different than for other groups of species. For example, for fish, we have all non-native fish would be classified as invasive species because of the potential. We don't really know which ones necessarily are going to become invasive. But for plants, there are so many non-native plants that are being used in the landscape industry and for agriculture and other, we couldn't possibly do that. And so for plants, we very specifically have pulled out the species that we know cause ecological problems and have the potential to and really need to be regulated in some way or another.
Yeah, I would think so. Well, we have callers online with questions for you. Francis in Muskego will give you a chance. Hi, Francis. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I've got a question about thistles. We have a large garden, and I don't know. I'm not authority on thistle, but there's a thistle that grows underneath the ground. It just needs a little stem, and it is along the roads left growing, and it is in the farmer fields, and when it gets to blowing, it blows across the yard, and it is a very hard thistle to control. I don't know if that's called a Canadian or what. Are there any rules on that? Because they can land around here just once it starts, it really goes in big bunches.
Well, that's actually a very good question because it leads into why we need these rules. Because Canada thistle is one of three species in the state of weeds that are currently on the noxious weed law. And the current noxious weed law says that statewide, if you have Canada thistle on your property, you must contain it. And people have been trying to do this for years and years, but it's been really inconsistent, and the enforcement of it is only at the local level. And so it's very erratically enforced, and that law really isn't very effective. And it's also only a state statute. And so we can't, as an agency, add species to that noxious weed law. And we've been working on trying to get that noxious weed law revised for a number of years. And we finally just gave up on it when we got the authority to develop this broader invasive species rule. So this invasive species rule will cover things like Canada thistle. And unfortunately, it's a species that's so widespread already that we cannot expect everyone to eradicate it from their property. It's just not reasonable for us to tell people, you must eradicate this or you'll be breaking the law. And so that species, along with many of the other species that are already widespread, will go into a restricted category. And the restricted category is one that means these are problem species. We don't want them spread any further. You may not buy them. You may not transport them, introduce them, et cetera. But if they're on your property, we would encourage you to try to control it, but you're not required to control it.
Okay, so that's in the restricted. What are the categories? The restricted?
The most restrictive category is prohibited. And okay. Prohibited has the same limitations as the others, as the restricted category, in that you cannot. Well, let's see. Jane's going to read off what the restrictions are here. She's found it.
All right. Jane, go ahead.
Okay. Actually, I had the wrong spot. Sorry.
Okay. Sorry.
Sorry. Transport, possession, transfer, or introduction are not allowed of prohibited species.
Or restricted species as well. And transfer includes buy, sell, barter, giveaway. And so both of those groups of species, you may not intentionally move them around, essentially. You may not intentionally introduce them. The difference between prohibited and restricted is prohibited species are ones that are either not yet in the state at all, and we think they'll become a big problem when they get here, or they're only locally abundant, and to the point that we think that we can probably still eradicate them or at least really contain them. And so they're the ones that we really want to work on making sure they don't spread. Restricted species, at least in some parts of the state, are already too widespread to expect that kind of eradication. And so they both have restrictions on what you can do with them, but otherwise the control requirements are different. Now, there are also two other categories. There's the watch category and the non-restricted category. The watch category is primarily an educational category. It's one that we've looked at these species, and we really don't have enough information to tell us that for sure these are either going to be a problem in the state, that they're really going to spread, or that they're actually going to be economically harmful. The non-restricted species tend to be ones that their socioeconomic value of those species is fairly high, and so even though they may be invasive, they're ones that we are not regulating at this time through this rule.
What would be an example of a non-restricted? Do you have an example?
Scotch pine. Scotch pine in sandy soils in central Wisconsin starts spreading a lot on our prairies, and it's a major Christmas tree. And it's a tree that's being used a lot in landscaping. And so because it's so valuable economically in the Christmas tree industry, it's one that we don't want to put restrictions on people actually growing and selling. But we do want to alert people to the fact that it can be troublesome in certain areas.
Talking about the new rules for invasive species classifications with Ron Martin, Jane Cummings Carlson, and Kelly Kearns, all of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The Department of Natural Resources is proposing some new rules for invasive species classifications, and they cover aquatics, they cover the forest, they cover our invasive plant program. Ron Martin, Jane Cummings Carlson, and Kelly Kearns of the DNR are guests today to talk about these rules and certainly to answer your questions. And they're certainly here to encourage you as well to get your input into this. There are some listening sessions coming up. There's a chance for you to participate in this whole process, and we hope you do. And certainly if you have questions about it, feel free to join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call. Ron, as we look at this pretty broad range in the aquatic area in terms of invasives, is there not?
Yes, it's a very, very, we're dealing not only with aquatic plants, but aquatic invertebrates and fish as well. So the whole range of aquatic and organisms.
And under the, Kelly explained earlier that there are four different areas, and Jane entered in two: prohibited, restricted, watch, non-restricted are the areas. Do we find aquatic species that are going to fall into all those categories?
Actually, no. For the aquatics, we have they're all in either the prohibited or restricted categories.
Okay, so those are kind of the two worst categories,
right,
if you really want, in terms of being a threat.
Correct.
What's the biggest threat in your mind? Is there one out there that's a bigger threat than another?
Well, I think the biggest threat comes from the discharge of ballast water into our Great Lakes and the range of organisms that could be present in the ballast water and ultimately get transported to our inland waters.
Yeah, that's a big concern.
Certainly there's threats coming from like aquaculture, aquarium trades as well, but those, in terms of the numbers of introductions that we have seen in the past, the ballast water is number one by far.
And Jane Cummings Carlson, how about the forest area? If you were going to nail down some couple, maybe one or two big threats, what would you identify?
Well, the one that's on most people's lips these days is the emerald ash borer, which is known to be only about 35 miles south of our border, just north of Chicago, and is capable of infesting and killing all of our native ash species. But another one that folks perhaps don't hear very much about is a very small insect called the hemlock woolly adelgid, also exotic and was recently found in a very localized area in northern lower Michigan. And it's important because hemlock is not widespread throughout the state, but it's a very important part of some very sensitive habitats in northern and central Wisconsin. And the insect doesn't have very many natural enemies. It's very difficult to manage. And so that's another one we're very concerned about.
We don't want it to cross the border.
Correct.
Well, we don't want it in Michigan either, or Minnesota, or any place else, for that matter. And these invasives, obviously, you know, they have, I suppose, where they're originally from, there are probably predators or things that can sort of balance them out a little bit, but that's not the case often.
That's a very important point, Larry, and that's why the rules are so important, because We often don't know what's on the horizon because these organisms in their native habitats don't cause a great deal of mortality or injury because they have co-evolved with other organisms that keep them in check. And so part of the rule deals with restricting these organisms through managing pathways. And an example of that might be firewood, which is something that wood that has been killed by some organism and might be spread all over the state and to other states and move long distances can carry life stages of some of these invasive species. So there is a part of the rule that deals with several of these pathways and tries to actually limit or prohibit movement through these pathways instead of focusing on just one organism.
I'm a member of the Dane County Tree Board, and so we did some broadcast work and tried to do a little education work on that firewood area, among other things, and not bringing firewood in from other places, you know, outside your own little area. And, you know, you never know if that's going to help, but education is a big part of this, isn't it?
Absolutely. And if I were to ask the public to do one single thing to protect our forests, it would be to limit the movement of firewood and purchase it locally.
Purchase locally. Well, I tell you what, there are lots of people who want to visit with you. So, and Jay's been waiting an awfully long time from Appleton. So let's go to Jay. Jay, hi. Thank you for waiting.
Hi. Thanks for having my call. I have some questions. I'm a landowner in Sauk County. And with the new categories, with restrictive and prohibitive, how and where does something like wild parsnip, the tall, 6 foot tall wild parsnip plants, how does that fall into the categories? And since we have a large parcel, a lot of it is under called CRP, and that we're somewhat limited to what we can do with that land to keep it natural per se. Most of it is prairie, and it's being overtaken, and we're not sure how to quite manage that.
That's a good question. Kelly Kearns?
Sure. Parsnip would fall into the restricted category in our proposed rules, and because it's too widespread that we certainly don't think we're going to be able to eradicate it statewide. It's here, and it's here to stay, and it spreads very rapidly, especially along roadsides and then into grasslands as well. And a lot of people who have CRP lands think that they can't mow their parsnip at the proper time, which is when it's just started to flower, just at the very beginning flower stages. If you mow it later than that, you're just going to spread it around. But they think they can't because that's during the grassland bird nesting season, and CRP lands you're not supposed to mow during grassland bird nesting. Well, you can do it, but you need to get approval from your county committee, the Land Conservation Committee there. And they will give approval to selectively mow things such as parsnip that are invasive. And so you definitely need to work with your county and get that approval and do it ahead of time before, you know, don't wait until the parsnip's in bloom to do that. But species like that are ones that we would encourage people to try to control, and we'd get information out from them. And if the local municipality or county wants to actually put stronger regulations on these, then they certainly can do that as well.
Oh, interesting. Thanks, Jay. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, you're having listening sessions, and you're having, you know, you've got these rules, and it's hard for me to imagine anybody being opposed to rules that would prohibit invasive species, Ron Martin, and yet you want input from the public on this. What's the reasoning on this?
Well, we want the public to look at the rules carefully and see if we've, first of all, classified the species. Are they in the right categories based on, you know, the criteria that we set up for classifying them? That's number one issue. And then the second thing is just to get feedback on the regulations themselves. Are they reasonable? You know, we put some things in there that we would call straw dogs that are just basically to get a reaction from the public on it. Normally when we write rules, we'll just go through a public hearing process as part of the rulemaking procedures. But we are offering the public, through the stakeholder involvement that we had in developing these rules and the classification of these organisms, to the listening sessions, to public hearings that will follow this, there's a lots of opportunity from the public to provide input into the rule, and that's what we're trying to afford every opportunity to the public to comment on the rule.
Yeah, and I, you know, and I'm thinking about our forest land now too, and here we are, what are we, the leading paper producer in the country, if I'm not mistaken. And so there's a lot of commercial, there could be a lot of commercial interest in this as well, Jane.
Yes, indeed. Although we have a long history in the state of regulating the wood industry, the Department of Agriculture and USDA Animal Plant Health Inspection Service already have methods in place to quarantine areas that are infested with certain organisms, which prohibits the movement of woody material out of those areas. So I don't think there will be a lot of new restrictions for the
commercial types. Huh?
Exactly right.
So this, in some ways, then the new rules are sort of like the average person like myself, let's say, if I've got a 40 acres or 75 acres or whatever.
Certainly. And you mentioned earlier, Larry, that a big part of the rule is to raise awareness regarding all of these organisms and the things folks can do, very simple things, to keep these prohibited species from being introduced and moving around the state. An actual fine is a possibility in this rule if a person does break some of the restrictions for the prohibited species, but public awareness will be a big part of this.
Susie and Seneca, thank you for waiting as well.
Hey,
hi.
I'm an example of somebody who's hoping to work with the DNR as far as these restricted species grow. We're cut flower growers, and we offer Oriental bittersweet as one of our products. We've tried growing the native bittersweet, and it's just not commercially viable. It's not as vigorous. And so my question on behalf of other growers is, if you have something that is a commercial crop for you, what is the DNR going to do as far as you're being able to sell that product?
Okay, and we have met actually on site with a couple of the Oriental bittersweet farmers already to talk to them about this. And the process that we have set up is that we actually will have permits. Oriental bittersweet is one that we have currently proposed to be listed as restricted. We don't want people to be planting it in their yards. We don't want them to be putting it into wreaths and putting it outside somewhere where the birds can take the seeds and start spreading it. This is a plant that can cause a lot of damage to forest, and the vines climb up the trees and actually can even kill the trees. And however, it's a very important cut flower a product, and we have a number of farms in the state that actually produce quite a bit of it. And so for those farms, they will apply for a permit, and we will give them a permit to go ahead and continue selling their cutting and selling their bittersweet. And we'll work with them to determine, you know, should it be limited to just wholesale sales out of the state. We'll work with them to determine what is their current business practices, what about those business practices are just fine and really won't cause any further damage, and are there things that maybe they need to make some adjustments. But for the most part, we'll be giving permits to people like Susie so that she can continue her business.
Okay, thanks for your time.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And Laura in Blue River, it's your turn next. Hi, Laura. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. This is almost a follow-up on what Susie was talking about, and I just finished writing two letters to Henry Field and Gurney's mail order catalogs about their selling buckthorn under the name of Tall Hedge and that they shouldn't maybe be doing it. And I got back a response saying, well, there are many things that are invasive in many places, and wherever it's prohibited, we don't do it. So is this regulation got strength enough to prohibit this kind of thing?
Yes. One of the things that will be useful about this is that places like Gurney's and Henry Fields will no longer be able to sell those plants into Wisconsin. Oh. And so, and we are working with the nursery industry. Both of the buckthorn species are on our list right now as potentially restricted species. And the industry people who have buckthorn or other restricted species in their fields, their production fields right now where they're growing them in order to sell them, they'll have a little time, a few years, in order to actually get rid of those from their stock so that we're not telling them that as soon as the rule is passed, boom, you have to burn all of your buckthorn. But after a few years, then we'll expect them to have gotten rid of that from their inventory and not to be selling it anymore. And there's actually a legal list that is used by nursery industries, and so those mail order catalogs should be consulting that. And once this is actually on our legal law, on our laws, then they should not be selling it anymore into Wisconsin.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
What's it called again? What were they calling it?
They were calling it Tall Hedge.
Tall Hedge. Oh, okay. Thanks. Well, that's one to remember then. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. You can join in too, by the way. We have some open lines finally again, so you can get on with your question. And it could be aquatics, it could be relating to the forest, could be relating to invasive plants. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890. Give a call, and we'll get you on pretty quickly here. Christina in Glenwood City is next, so let's go there. Hi, Christina.
Hi, thank you. Question I've been wondering about for a couple of years now. I've noticed that ornamental grasses are increasing in popularity, and I've watched them spreading across the fields. They seem to have a very dense root system, and I'm referring to the tall, beautiful, feathery looking grasses. Mm-hmm. Are they invasive? Is this something we should be concerned about, or has that been considered?
Yes, you're probably talking about miscanthus. It has a very white flower on it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound familiar?
Yes.
Okay. And the miscanthus species we did not assess and include in this list at this time because most of them spread primarily clonally. They don't really spread by seed very much. And so even though they can spread from one planting, and they can get much larger, they can spread along a roadside, they don't seem to usually spread by seed and therefore get into natural areas or cause a lot of problems ecologically. It's probably a species that if we did assess it, would end up in a watch category for right now. There's a number of different cultivars of two different species of miscanthus, and so we would need to get a lot better details of information on which cultivars have the potential to spread and which ones don't. And there's a researcher in Minnesota that's been doing a lot of work on this, and so we're mainly relying on her work.
All right. Thank you very much. Mike in Marshfield, it's your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I think we got practically a buckthorn emergency in Marshfield. There seems to be two different kinds. One has a berry that you can put in your mouth and it tastes pretty good. The other has a berry that you put in your mouth and it tastes awful. And the birds don't make a difference. So they go to the abandoned industrial sites, fill up their crops with buckthorn seeds, and then come roost in my white spruce overnight. And the buckthorn seeds come out of these birds and sprinkle through the white spruce like a pachinko machine. And finally, I got buckthorn. Now, interestingly enough, it needs to get about 6 inches high before it starts to reproduce. And I wonder how many years it was before I noticed I had a problem, because now I think I got a seed bank that won't quit.
Yeah.
Short of lighting fire to my house and my bushes, what do I do for buckthorn?
Well, you said something that it sounds a little confusing, saying that they reproduce at 6 inches. Buckthorns are large shrubs or small trees, and they have to get large enough to reproduce, or they would be much larger than 6 inches tall before they reproduce. But But regardless, basically buckthorn can be controlled by either foliar spraying of the plants. Seedlings can be hand-pulled quite easily. And larger plants basically are cut, and then you apply an herbicide to the cut stump. So it's a fairly simple process to kill them, but it takes a lot of work if you've got a large area.
Yeah.
And buckthorn is one of the many species that we would be trying to regulate with these rules.
You would be, and where would that it fall? Prohibited or
restricted?
Restricted, oh, yeah, because there's so much of it.
Right.
All right, Mike. Thank you for calling. Tony in Madison, your turn. Hi, Tony.
Hi. Good afternoon. I'm a little nervous here. So, listen, I'm curious about the round goby situation. I know that you're going through. We don't know how we're going to deal with things right now, but I'm really surprised that the DNR just hasn't declared open season on them and said, fish and kill as many as you possibly can because they're ruining our perch population. Excuse me, any thoughts about that?
Okay, thanks for calling. The round goby.
Yeah.
What is it, by the way? Ron, you can tell us that first.
Well, it's about a round goby grows to about 6 to 8 inches in length, and it's a bottom feeder. We find it primarily in Lake Michigan, but it's also in Lake Superior. As far as we know, it's not in any of our inland waters yet. And they're a very fierce competitor. They feed on both bass eggs and other species, and so they're in direct competition with the mottled sculpin in Lake Michigan. But you bring up a very good point. I think a lot of anglers, particularly the fish from the piers, tend to predominantly catch round gobies. And it's a frustration with anglers. Can't they keep them, and what's mm-hmm. the deal? Well, they're not listed in our regulations as a game fish, so you can't legally possess them. The only way you can have a goby on your presence is if you're taking it for purposes of identification to a DNR fisheries biologist or somebody like that to identify it as a goby. So, perhaps, it's even if you grabbed you fished out a bucket of round gobies out of Lake Michigan, you're probably not going to make a dent in the overall population because there's that many of them, in the lake. Mm. So, in our rules, we have listed round goby as a prohibited species, which means you can't possess, transport.
So they're okay. So they are a prohibited species.
Right. We don't want them in our inland waters, put it that way.
They're proposed to be a prohibited species.
Proposed, right.
I want to, before we run out of time, I want to mention these listening sessions and talk a little bit about that. Well, where do people go for more information on this? You have on the website, are the rules on the DNR website, Jane?
Yes, Larry, they are. And you can also, excuse me, find out where these listening sessions are at that site, dnr.wi.gov /invasives/classification.
Okay, so go to the DNR website, and it's dnr/invasives/classification. Classification. And the sessions, I wanted to mention the sessions. There's one tomorrow, as a matter of fact, at 5 at the Spooner Ag Research Station, 5 p.m., and I think all sessions are at 5. January 11th at Rhinelander at Nicolet College. January 14th in Madison at the UW Arboretum. January 15th, Milwaukee at State Fair Park. January 16th in Green Bay at the Brown County Central Library. And January 17th at the La Crosse Central High School. So all of those, and I mentioned them quickly, they're all at 5 o'clock, but go to the DNR website. You're going to find out more about that. Are you guys making all those trips, or are
most of us are?
Yeah. So you'd be on the road a lot.
And people don't need to go to those meetings in order to provide input. There's many ways they can provide input through the website. They should look at the website, see what they have comments on, and they can either send an email through that, or fill out an electronic comment form, or they can just print off a comment form and then mail that in. Or there's also some phone numbers on there if they want to contact us
directly. But you really want the input.
We would love to have the input.
All right. Well, I tell you what, I thank you all three for coming today. It's been a pleasure, and let's hope we get some great input, and let's hope we get those rules going. Appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
Ron Martin, Jane Cummings Carlson, and Kelly Kearns, all of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, with us today to talk about the new rules for invasive species classifications. Go to the DNR website, take a look at the rules, and then please attend. Find out where your closest session is for you and attend and get your input in there. And thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network.